Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to the Peristyle Podcast on a Monday. We're going to talk some USC Trojan football with Dan Weber, beat writer and columnist for USCFootball.com. We're also going to talk some about the odds of the games coming up and what USC did against the spread in the Utah game. Of course, the Notre Dame game coming up this weekend with Joe Duffy a little bit later on in the show. If you have any questions or comments, you can email us podcast@USCFootball.com, or you can call or text, leave a voicemail, or send us a text at 424-254-9141. You can find the show on iTunes, itunes.com/peristylepodcast, or any of the podcasting apps like Google Play, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, Audio Boom. We're all over the place. If you can't find anything, if you can't find us, let me know. I'll make sure we get listed on your favorite podcasting app. And please leave us positive feedback, 5-star rating, all that stuff really helps to grow the show. We are in our 10th season covering the Trojan football team here on the Peristyle Podcast. And we are lucky to have Dan Weber joining us and getting ready to answer a bunch of your questions. What's up, Dan? How you doing?
Pretty good. Pretty good. I do have a question, though.
Yeah.
Is there a question about USC against the spread? You mentioned that later on you would delve into USC against the spread.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, is that still an issue? Take the spread.
Take whatever. Well, okay, so USC is 1-6 against the spread. Only cover came against Stanford. So, like, yeah, they were favored against, 12.5 or 13 over Utah, and obviously didn't cover, winning by one. But this weekend, this is what I'm curious to talk to Joe about. USC is actually an underdog. This will be the first time.
Yeah, I don't know. How does that work in terms of beating the spread if you're the underdog? If you win, obviously you do, but that'd be interesting. I would probably take a one-point win at Notre Dame and call that a win no matter what, how you look at it.
But, yeah, yeah.
That is interesting. I will say this. I was just thinking about this. Notre Dame better watch out because this is the first time since 2011, I guess it is, that USC goes into South Bend without an interim football coach, with an actual guy who started the season, is the head football coach, is still coaching by the time they get to South Bend. The last two times, the guy who coached USC in South Bend wasn't coaching when the season started.
That's very interesting. I didn't even realize that. It's also the first time since like 2009 both teams have been ranked, I believe, but not having an interim head coach.
I did, but I hadn't thought about this, but Ed Orgeron was coaching in 13, and Clay, just an interim coach, was coaching in 15. So here's this greatest intersectional game in the history of college football with two of the top five programs in the history of college football. Had one of the programs coming in having just fired their coach. It's just kind of amazing when you think about it.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, before we jump in, just wanted to thank our sponsor, doing a great job with us, Trader Joe's. I just had one of their carrot cake muffins this morning for breakfast. Actually, I ate the whole thing. My wife was a little mad. She wanted me to eat half, but they're too good, and they got the cream cheese icing on top, so love those things. Trader Joe's, it's their 50th anniversary this year, so pretty cool stuff. They've been helping us out for the last several months, and certainly, if there are any Trader Joe's in your neighborhood, go check them out. We got a brand new one in Hermosa Beach that I go to all the time. Of course, the new one over at USC. We had an event there in August that was awesome. So if you want to do any kind of tailgating for some of the upcoming USC home games, a great place to do is just stop over at the USC Village, jump into Trader Joe's, and they'll help you out. But it's not just tailgating stuff. Like, they got lots of beer and wine and cheese and stuff you would like for your tailgate, but there's the staples too, like eggs, milk, butter, bread, things like that. But great stuff over at Trader Joe's. They've been awesome to us. They're consumers of the Peristyle podcast and also sponsors. So shout out to all the Trader Joe's folks that are out there listening. They had a lot of fun. We had a lot of fun with them over at that event in August.
Well, you were talking about games coming up. There are only two home games left, only two chances to do that at Trader Joe's at the University Village. So where's the season gone? Four of the home games are already gone, just Arizona and UCLA. Three on the road, and yet I don't think we still have any idea where this USC team is going.
Yeah, the identity is it is pretty amazing. Seven games in, you're like, oh, you'll know a lot more after Stanford. Nope, we didn't. We thought we knew more, but we didn't. Do we know more now after the second half of the Utah game? I'm not really sure. But
you know what we know more? I watched the Cal-Washington State game, and we know more how bad that trip to Pullman was.
Yeah.
We knew it was bad at the time. Now we really know how bad that trip was.
Yeah. Well, okay, so we were getting – we did Harvey Hyde on the show yesterday, and we got some questions that came in during the first half of the game that people were upset. One guy called in. You know,
those weren't questions.
They were rants, yeah. That's Rain of Troy. They do the rant line. We're taking questions. But we did get some rants, and someone called in, and they called back, like apologizing, like basically bench Sam and stuff.
Right.
So we have a couple. I'm going to play you back to back, I think, on these. Couple Sam Darnold voicemails. We'll start off with these. So here's the first one.
Hey, Ryan. This is Mondo. Hey, I'm just watching the game. I know what's wrong with Sam. He sucks. No good. We need a new quarterback. Stop babying him. Defense, offense, they ain't doing nothing. We need to get that. We need the coach, everybody that he hired, out of there. They can't stop nothing. They can't stop air. Everybody out. You keep saying, there's something wrong with Donald. There's nothing wrong with him. He sucks. I'm sick of that.
And I had to cut the last part off because there were some words not suitable for the podcast. And then here I'll play one. So he was obviously not happy. Let me play one more.
Hi, guys. This is Don from the East Coast. This message is for Dan Weber. What I'm seeing is that Sam is given pretty much like the freedom to kind of do what he wants when he wants. And that's not a good thing, because if he was playing with any other coach, would Nick Saban be okay with him turning the ball over like this? Would Nick Saban just let him just, would Urban Meyer allow this stuff? They wouldn't. He would get reamed out. He would get screamed out. And also with Iman Marshall constantly having penalties. If he was with any of those top coaches, he would have been benched games ago, because, you know, you can't continue to do these things and have this problem. It's just frustrating to kind of see these continued problems and they're not getting fixed. But, you know, I love the podcast. You guys do a great job. And thanks. Take care. Bye.
Well, here's the thing with Sam and the turnovers. They were correct in figuring out they had to do something about the front four of Utah. And they figured that, and we've said this all along, and people have all, you know, agreed that Sam needs to probably carry the ball more and become more of a threat in their offense. The problem has been they haven't been able to practice it for whatever reason. You know, we can decide what it is that's been going on for probably at least the last month, that Sam has not gotten much explosiveness, that his mechanics throwing the ball, especially on the run, seem to be off, that he doesn't look like or hasn't looked like the guy from last year. So they decide to add a wrinkle. They're going to add, he's going to keep the ball on the read option, and he's also going to pitch it. Problem is, you really have to work on that a lot. And one of the things that happened, and it's easy to blame Sam, but one of the things that has to happen is your running back, if you're going to pitch, it has to be aligned perfectly. Or even if you're going to throw that little flat, you know, pass into the flat, your running back has to get perfect, you know, coordination with the quarterback. Now, obviously, the quarterback's always going to get the blame. But I think there was a case that Sam was, you know, trying to do what was good for the team and what they wanted him to do, but they weren't really prepared to do it at the level, you know, that you have to be prepared to do it against a pretty good defense like Utah. I mean, I think if you overall you look at it, Utah was one of the, you know, better defensive teams in the country and a ranked team, and they were allowing 314 yards a game. And USC got 532 yards. So even if you made the phone call in the first half, you gotta cut them some slack. I mean, they did have like 260 yards of offense in the first half. They only had 7 points. But there were other things going on than just that, you know, Sam isn't getting the job done. I think they were asking him to do a lot. He's clearly got his explosiveness almost all the way back. His ability to throw just on the touchdown pass, the 17-yard touchdown pass to Tyler Petit, where he scrambled and then just drilled the ball instantaneously through two defenders into the end zone where the window was open for like a nanosecond, tells you he's getting back to where he has been and where he had to be. But, you just can't focus on Sam, and it's easy because he gets all the attention and he gets all the praise. But that's not how football works. And the second half, when, again, they let Sam be Sam, shows you where he is right now, and is the hope for the rest of the season is with that guy who was playing quarterback for USC in that second half. I mean, that was about as well as you can play it. And if that's the model going forward, they're in pretty they've got a chance at least. And give Sam credit. Boy, he's played through stuff and hasn't dropped his, you know, head and said, oh my gosh, or felt sorry for himself. He just goes out there and plays. And you gotta love that. You really do.
The turnovers, obviously a problem. USC, I think, fourth or fifth worst in the nation as far as number of turnovers go. And the teams below them are all, I guess you could say, terrible. So to be a 6-1 team to be, you know, near leading the nation and turning the ball over, obviously concerns. We had two questions. One, Neil in Manila, can Sam Darnold go through the ball security drills that running backs do? Thanks and fight on. And then Aaron said, Sam Darnold had some fumble problems last year, and the problem seems to have surfaced again over the last couple of games. Has anyone ever suggested he try a glove or maybe wristbands if the problem is related to sweat? Any other ideas how they may help be able to correct it, especially if it's just carelessness? Aaron.
See, I don't think it was any of those. On the handoff fumble, it was a case of reading the play. And they haven't run that play enough and haven't had Sam. You know, as a former coach, I know how hard it was to get a kid to just run the option as a play. You've got to run it as a significant part of your offense. And that means the whole part of the option, which means the fake, the ball fake, if it's going to be the reading the defensive end, for example, keeping the ball. And then on the pitch, you've got to do the same thing. And so on that play, I think Sam extends the ball to Rojo, sees the read is there for him to keep it, tries to get it back. Rojo's already got it. So that's something you have to work on. That's not, ball security drills with the running backs or anything. That's just a matter of not having done that enough in practice and games and getting that quick read in the middle of a game and realizing, oh, if I keep it, I can go. But Rojo already kind of had it. On the second pitch, on the pitch, I don't think Rojo is in perfect alignment for where Sam needed him to be on that pitch, and you're getting pressure probably a little bit different than Sam thought it was gonna get to him. Again, that's not having done it enough. And then on the swing pass, Rojo is obviously not supposed to be behind Sam. He's supposed to be slightly upfield so that it's not a lateral, so the ball is not alive. So if the ball gets loose, it's an incomplete pass. So you could make the case that in none of those was it strictly Sam. You know, till this point, obviously, with the interceptions and what have you, you know, it's a combination of things and probably more on Sam than anything in terms of some of the throws. And he certainly doesn't have his total accuracy back yet. But didn't throw any interceptions. That's certainly a plus. And I think you could make a case that none of those ball security issues were completely on Sam. And again, he was in a situation where on two of those three, he was doing something that we haven't seen him do in practice or in a game all year. And that's awfully hard to do, to pick up on the fly against a good defense like Utah. And with all that, you know, they ended up wearing Utah down. They ran 83 plays. By the end of the game, Utah was just completely gassed. A good defense just was on its heels. Ended up giving up 218 more yards than they averaged giving up. So I'm looking at it, you know, this is, as far as I'm concerned, you know, a glass half full situation and a learning situation. They probably, as good an idea as it was to A, have Sam keep the ball and run it, and B, have him maybe even pitch it on the option, you can't do it if you haven't done it enough, if it's not just second nature to read that in and know exactly where your relationship has to be with the running back and all of that. And those were some tough lessons, but they survived somehow. Had they not survived, we would not probably be looking at that so charitably, obviously.
Right.
But
survive in advance.
This was one Sam a pass a little bit.
Yeah. This was one that I said, you know, Notre Dame and Utah, those two games looking, you know, heading into last weekend, I was like, if USC wins, doesn't matter if it's ugly, doesn't, whatever. That's all that matters in these ones. You can pick apart Oregon State because they were awful, but beating Utah, beating Notre Dame, if you just win those games, I don't think there's really cause for alarm. Now, it's weird not, you know, playing as bad as you could possibly play almost in the first half and then playing way better in the second, but this is one of those things, Dan, where it's like, I think fans should just take this one and be like, that was a big game. That was a big game in the South. It's important. If you win ugly against Utah, you win.
Well, and his, you know, for example, the one play that he made, the third and 10, he hadn't, they're on the 7-yard line. He hadn't gotten any breaks with the first couple of play calls. And he pulls the ball down and he scrambles for 14 yards, keeps the drive alive. The first, you know, their first conversion situation, and keeps a 98-yard scoring drive alive with a 14-yard scramble. Perfect. I mean, he pulls it down perfectly at the perfect time. He beats the linebacker. He gets down after he's gotten, you know, the 14 yards for the first, and they're off to the races. I mean, that's the play. If you're going to remember a play from that game, that's the play to remember. That's the game winner right there. And that's Sam. And we haven't seen that. We have not seen that explosive scramble when it's there for the first down. And with that, I'm not sure they need to run as much option, but I'll tell you this. Notre Dame's defensive preparations this week became a lot more difficult after Saturday, because now they got to say, hey, this guy might keep the ball, and he's not bad. And if they don't pitch it, you know, away, Ronald Jones might end up with it. And if they figure out how to do it right, that's a problem. So now Notre Dame's defensive game plan is significantly more, complex for them. Now they get 2 weeks to get ready for this game, and they've been getting ready for USC. Well, you know, I was reading that they maybe only practiced a couple of times last week, but their coaches, and thinking about what they're going to do and what they've probably done in the first couple of practices, did not include Sam the scrambler or Sam the option quarterback. So now they got to go back to the drawing board a little bit. And for me, I think that's a really good thing. I know there are people who say, oh, that's, you know, it'd be good to hide it and spring it on them. Well, they hit it and they sprung it on Utah. And that's probably not the way to do it. I think the way to do it is to do it. Do it really well and make them prepare for it. And now Notre Dame has to.
Yeah. I mean, they really surprised Utah by giving them the ball three times like that. You know,
yeah, surprised Ronald that ball was lying there. All Ronald has to do is fall on it.
Yeah.
And I know they say, well, we coach them in a if it's in that gray area, you got to I think it's one of those plays where you can tell them, but you got to, when you talk about coaching them, they just have to do it.
Yeah.
They have to do it enough, under pressure, full speed, in practice, so that it becomes second nature. And that probably wasn't the case.
We got one more on Sam. I think there's the last one. Bear Secutor. Well, it's more on the coaches than Sam. Now, he put the quotes around this. I don't think this is an actual quote from Sam Darnold, but maybe I missed it. He said, my receivers aren't especially fast, tall, or big. My throws have to be perfect for them to catch it. My opponents are blitzing me all the time and stacking the box to take away the run. The play calls are the same as the last game and last season. And, oh, the coaches won't let me run or audible. Is it any wonder Sam is struggling since the Stanford game, the only team to have arrogance, stupidity to defend USC straight up? USC's offensive travails are not fundamentally a question of chemistry, injuries, or communication. Sam had plenty of chemistry the first time he stepped on the field with the receivers last year. A healthy USC offense struggled even against Western Michigan in the first half this season. It's the players and play calling. Since you can't change the former, you have to change the latter. Yet when I see Tyson mutter, it's all about the way the ball bounces. Is it any surprise Sam panicked last week and went beyond taking chances to make desperate decisions / throws? Bear Secutor.
Well, you know, here's one thing that was different. And it does, you talked about the wide receivers fairly early, Bear. And Clay pointed this out last night. You've kind of taken it for granted over the years, but it hasn't been there this year. That one big difference in the Utah game was the receivers made what Clay, and I think it's a great term, the catch bang play, where you catch the ball and you get drilled absolutely immediately. Often you're still in the air. And you, Michael Pittman made one, Stephen Mitchell made one, Deontay made at least one, Tyler Vaughns made one, and Ronald Jones made one. All or five, much of this year, you maybe wouldn't have seen the catch made. And that was a big part of those three, that 98-yard, that 93-yard, the 88-yard drive. You have to make those plays to keep those drives going. And for the first time this year, we saw multiple wide receivers, multiple receivers make those plays. You saw, you know, the tight ends, three touchdown passes. You saw, you know, as we said, Ronald. That's something Sam hasn't had yet this year. So, you know, you can say, you know, the wide receivers or the receivers in general weren't up to snuff. They were against Utah. And that's, again, something USC fans have been used to and Sam's been used to. And Saturday we saw that. So I think there's some of that. You're right about the offense. If you go back 2 weeks and you run, if you went, ran the Washington State film next to the Utah film, is that the same team? Could that possibly be the same team? I mean, that was the nadir, if you will, of the USC offensive effort for this year. That was just 2 weeks ago. 2 weeks ago, they didn't complete a single pass to a tight end or a running back. So you saw a much more varied offense. You saw a much more active, much healthier looking, and we're never going to know what that exactly is when we're talking about Sam. But that Sam looked like the Sam of last year. He's still not got the same accuracy on the run, probably, but he's getting there. And so I think they probably put too much on him because they really wanted to be able to figure out how to handle that defensive end from Utah and give him problems. Unfortunately, they gave Sam some problems in doing that. And that was the easy focus the first half. But the rest of the guys stepped up. I mean, here's Ronald Jones, another 100-yard, you know, game and a 13th straight game he scores, and he's still not 100%. He's still playing on a gimpy ankle that he was in getting treatment on, you know, on Sunday. But the guy stepped up. And that's, I mean, 532 yards against Utah. That's a pretty good effort, you know. So it had to be a good effort to overcome the three turnovers in the first half. But at least that was the Washington State game. It didn't look like they even tried in terms of what can we do against this team. And you know, then you have to sit back and watch Cal just throttle Washington State, and you say, oh, maybe that's what we should have done. Maybe that's what, you know, if you're USC, you're sitting there thinking, gosh, I wonder if we'd have tried to take them out of the game, maybe we'd been okay. But at least they tried stuff against Utah. Tried too much, but I'll take trying.
Let's go Mark in Crown City, which is Pasadena, if you don't know. What's the likelihood Coach Helton, now he doesn't say which one, so maybe I'll let you fill that in, took over the play calling responsibilities for the second half of the Utah game, or at least gave specific instructions to T and Tyson. Okay, so he was talking about Clay Helton. T and Tyson on expectations during halftime. The Trojans appeared to be a different team with both tempo and consistency after a poorly constructed and executed first half. Fight on, Mark and Crown City. And I like that he says poorly constructed. People are like, oh, the execution was bad. Yeah, sometimes it's just a bad plan. And I think that was poorly constructed is a good way to put it. But that's Mark.
Yeah, and you won't get them to quite admit, you know, it was so different because, you know, they had 262 yards of offense in the first half. You know, three turnovers, only 7 points. But they will tell you that what they were trying to do the first half was kind of working. Just, you know, they were shooting themselves in the foot. And once you shot yourself in the foot three times, you run out of feet, you know. So then they had to start over again the second half. And they, you know, those three drives, a 98, a 93, and an 88-yard drive against Utah, I mean, that's just unheard of. That's really good football. So I think just eliminating the mistakes, you know, saying, okay, Sam, if we're going to run you, scramble. You know, pick your moment, Clay always talks about on the punt return, he wants his guy to pick his pitch. I think I'd like the quarterback to be able to pick his pitch exactly right and know exactly. See, I think a lot of what's been happening is Sam didn't feel like he could pull the ball down and take off with it. For whatever reason, he wasn't doing that this year. So that meant he was forcing more throws, and they weren't getting the scramble. Take the scramble play away from USC Saturday, they lose. If Sam doesn't do that 14-yard first down drive, you know, sustaining scramble, that game, they don't win. So they need all those components. And I think they were trying hard to get him, into the game as a running threat. And they added something that probably they just weren't up to speed enough on in terms of doing. It was the right idea. It just wasn't, they didn't have the ability to execute it, I don't think, at that time. So I don't know that it was a whole different play calling and all that. I think they eliminated the mistakes of the first half. So that's, yeah. I think, more than anything, they eliminated the mistakes.
Speaking of mistakes, Tarek wanted to know, why are Kyle Whittingham's teams always disciplined while USC has lacked discipline for years?
You know, you coach a certain way. I mean, you do certain, some people just say, we're going to do this. This is who we are. If you can beat us, fine. Good for you. We're just not going to do a lot of things. I mean, USC tries to do a lot of things. I mean, USC, when they say balance, on offense, for example, they say we're gonna be able to, you know, pass it as well as we run it, And maybe that, in a lot of ways, that means we're not going to necessarily just be one thing on offense. Now, Utah's trying to do more on offense now and trying to play, you know, more wide open, and a new offensive coordinator, because I think Utah decided that can do you a lot of good, but it can't quite get you there. Now, I think they've kind of abandoned that. This is exactly who we are, and we're going to be really good at what we do, but it's going to be kind of limited because maybe we're never going to have quite the same talent. Maybe we'll never get quite the same, you know, All-American quarterback and what have you. But, you know, we did not see their transfer, Tyler Huntley, who they are, you know has some real skills and what have you. But Troy Williams was good enough last year and played his best game against USC last year. They looked awfully good and still got, some breaks from USC last year. And if you look at the turnaround in the second half, and USC, you know, they don't give up that last drive, which, again, they kind of reverted the form once they got the lead. And then you wondered, are they playing again not to lose? But they were 21-0 against Utah in the second half at that point. And they can do more things than Utah. And so you're probably going to have more mistakes. But you pay your money and take your chance. And Ty Winningham has decided this is who we are. And he does a great job. I'll say this, you know, he's got a great special teams and that doesn't always work. I mean, they had a great punt return game coming in there. They got zipped. They had a great field goal kicker, best in the nation, 15 out of 16. And he misses, 21-yarder or whatever the heck that thing was from. Sometimes you can have all the best plans and all the best, you know, trends, and you come in and something doesn't happen. It just goes wrong. I mean, just that one field goal. That guy didn't miss that field goal. Life is much more difficult for USC. I mean, the good news, maybe they would have had to make the stop on the last drive, and maybe they would, instead of playing it the way they did. But yeah, I think it's been a smart thing for Kyle Whittingham to do what he's done. I'm not sure, though, that ever gets him into the championship game. USC tries to do more, doesn't always do it well. But with better athletes, you have a chance.
Let's go. Tark with a Q. He said, outside of the turnovers from Darnold, I was impressed with the USC team that showed up against Utah. The play calling was solid. That's an interesting take. I don't think a lot of people agree with that. Defense played well, and even special teams showed improvement other than the one punt that he says VJ, but I think he means that Jenny Harris should have caught. There's actually two I think he should have caught. In your opinion, did you see the team make strides in the right direction week over week?
Absolutely. I mean, you put up 532 yards of offense on Utah. That's terrific. I mean, that's 218 yards more than Utah is giving up on average. And, you know, okay, they're not playing USC every week, but 532 yards on Utah, that's great. I mean, that's really special. I mean, they had a diversity of receivers, tried to get Daniel Motsababy back. That didn't quite happen, but still, three touchdown passes to the tight end. That's way better. That's just and the plays that the wide receivers made and Rojo made and Vavai Malapai, he had his career long run. I just think you saw some good things. You saw an offensive line that playing against the biggest defensive line and one of the more sound defensive lines they're going to play against, you saw them finally start to do more. Now, Clay, I think, said, I think it was more they're wearing down, softening, and what have you. But it looked more like they were running more the quick hitter stuff. And where that gives you the advantage, if you're the quick attacking offensive line, where you don't run the slow developing zone read as much, and you run quick stuff, which gets Rojo through the hole, maybe before they've gotten completely out of their stances, and you can engage them first and have some gap control. I think there was a lot of progress made, just a lot of progress. And just taking Utah's punt return guy out. I mean, that was really good. I mean, to get them zip, nothing on punt returns, you know. Now, if USC could stop letting the ball roll, you know, then they could have at least at the worst a standoff. They're going to have to probably figure something out. And do you put Tyler Vaughns or Deontay Burnett back and just say, catch everything, fair catch everything, don't let it bounce. You know, teams are obviously trying to really exploit that rugby style stuff and kick away from the lone safety and then watch it bounce and they just, you know, feel like he's not probably going to get to it. USC, it seems like it's been lining up fairly deep, maybe excessively deep, as it would seem, and putting a lot of pressure on Ajene to have to come up and catch the ball running against the cover guys coming the other way. And that's a really, because now you're trying to gauge where the ball's coming down, and you're also trying to gauge where those cover guys are, and you're doing it on the fly. I mean, that was hard for Adoree. That's hard for anybody if you're lined up probably deeper than you need to be. And so hopefully they get that squared away, because they're way better off just catch it, fair catch it. And if you do that with, say, Deontay and Tyler, that's what you want. You don't want them to get hurt at that point. I know Clay keeps saying, tell them to just wait for their pitch. And if, you know, if I'm the coach, I'm giving them the take signal on every one of those punts. Just catch it and stand right there, and we'll be happy that the ball doesn't roll down to the goal line.
Yeah, Clay Helton didn't. So this is the questions on the conference call. These were coming from Scott Wolf, who, you know, can be a little confrontational at times. We won't go into it, but Scott and I were tweeting a little bit. So he had asked a couple questions. One about the punt return thing, and two was about the play calling. And I got, there was very terse answers from Clay Helton on that. But my indication, like, just from, maybe he was just, you know, not real happy with the line of questioning, but I don't see any indication from Clay Helton that they're changing up who's returning punts. I kind of thought they would in this game, and they didn't. And if they didn't after he fumbled, they didn't after, you know, giving the ball up inside the five a couple of times, I just don't think they're going to do it.
Well, he did say the one comment, the very last about the punt returns, was he wished they'd made better decisions. So he has been touting Ajene as a fairly good decision maker, and now he said he wished they'd made better decisions. So I think that got you to the point where he wasn't going to agree. I mean, I think that line of questioning got off to a bad start when the first question is, well, who's really calling the plays? and do you think, you know, and he says, you know, T Martin's doing a great job. And, you know, then the second part of that question was, well, who's really calling the plays? And he said, T Martin's doing a wonderful job. He repeated his answer, and it was about six words, and that was all he's going to get. And he wasn't about to jump on Ajene after that as well. He, you know, but I wouldn't be surprised if they figure something else out. I mean, they've had in practice Tyler Vaughns and Deontay, you know, just catching the ball and not necessarily trying to return it. It wouldn't shock me if they went that direction at all and just say, just catch it. And take no chances.
Yeah.
But we'll see. I mean, that's what I think I would do. It's amazing that you really, with all the athletes USC's recruited, all the wide receivers, all the defensive backs, you don't have somebody who's a candidate. Obviously, you're maybe in the history of USC, you're never going to find another Adoree Jackson. But just somebody that can catch it and attempt to return it. And, you know, the guys they have, for example, it looked like potential decent kickoff returners like Velus Jones and Stephen Carr, for one, you know, reason or another, just aren't punt return guys that you would put back there. And I would have been interested in seeing what would happen with Greg Johnson if he doesn't get hurt and has to get surgery. He would have been probably my candidate to see what from a freshman what you could do with him, and he's now out for the season. So you may have to go to you know, an alternative plan back there. But they got to get something because everybody sees the film that they're going to play, and they're all going to do kind of the same thing. You know, give it. You know, when Clay likes that, the baseball analogy, you know, get your pitch, and they're trying to throw, you know, throw the ball in the dirt and see if they can get USC to swing at it. And yeah, it hasn't happened. So I think you got to get somebody who's confident that he can catch it no matter where it is, and just, you know, stay there, don't get hurt.
I get the feeling sometimes coaches, not just USC, I mean, all coaches can be stubborn sometimes when it's like, something you get the question asked 50 times, like, hey, why aren't you doing this? And it seems like the fans want you to do that. The media's asking about the logical thing seems to be to do this. At some point, sometimes coaches are like doing the opposite because they're stubborn about they want to show you. It's like they don't want to admit, yeah, that was wrong. I'm not saying this is the case here, but you see that sometimes.
And I think you're right, because I don't think you become a football coach at a place like USC or those kinds of comparable jobs if you're not a little bit stubborn. I mean, you got to be kind of tough-minded. You can't give in to, you know, this or that, or you can't, you know, run away from what you're trying to do. So I think stubbornness is almost a necessity in being a, you know, a football coach. But being, you got to be smart. You got to know immediately, okay, that's not working. It's an interesting combination of stubbornness and ability to recognize exactly what's going on. I mean, for example, who's more stubborn than Nick Saban? I don't know. Is there a coach more stubborn? How long did it take him to pull out his veteran quarterback or returning quarterback last year in the USC game? Two series?
Yeah.
To go with the true freshman? So here's this guy that's the most stubborn coach in the world at the most important position, took two series and said, that's it. He's out of here. I'm going with the freshman.
Yeah.
So that combination of those things, you know, and it's not exactly definable, and every situation is different, but you got to be both, I think.
Yeah. I think Lane was, he was notorious for that kind of stuff where it's like more of, he wanted to show you how smart he was. So if like the running game was just working perfectly, he knew that's what everyone thinks, you should just run the ball. I'm going to show you I can do something different than what's obvious and just like baffling stuff like that. We don't want to talk about that.
Yeah, well, I still remember the Hawaii game when they were struggling. And Lane, it might have been Lane's, I don't know, it was Lane's first game at Hawaii. And I guess they didn't know who the quarterback was. And Cody Kessler's out there, and he calls an audible, and they're being shut out. And sometime in the first half, calls an audible, throws it like a, you know, 20-yard touchdown pass, runs off after changing the play, and Lane says, don't ever do that again. He just threw his first touchdown pass, their first touchdown pass, and he's told, don't ever do that again, because he changed the coach's play. you just, you know, you got to be able to handle both. You really do.
Well, let's.
And you got to be happy when your players make plays. I do think that's what Clay, he started off with last night, and he was absolutely right. He said, you know, players win games for you. That's what happens. You've got to know that. If you think it's about you, it's about your players.
Yeah. Got to put them in the right position. Okay, we still got a bunch of questions, so we'll try to go through these fairly quickly if we can. I apologize. Just, there's a lot that came in. Eric in Los Angeles, he's Love My Wine and Trojans on the Peristyle. He said, I love the podcast. I appreciate all you and your staff do to make my long daily car commute palatable. After the gut-wrenching game last night, a few questions for Dan Weber. Also, while the game wasn't the defining one, I was hoping to finish the remaining schedule. I think the second half might have given us the light bulb, the light bulbs went on in a number of places, not just Sam, but the offensive line really pushed Utah around, and the starting three wide receivers are starting to get along with the tight end. Any thoughts there? Thanks for all you do, Eric in L.A.
Yeah, I'm thinking, like you said, a defining half game, a defining second half. And I don't think that's wrong. I mean, the light bulb, you know, analogy, I think you got to, you know, if you're a USC fan, you got to hope that's what it was. And there's been a lot of talk this year about the light bulb going on for this guy and that guy. And one would hope the light bulb went on for all of them, for everybody involved. And I think in my head, there was enough good that happened in that second half to say, you know, there's the game plan, there's the roadmap, there's the model. Keep it going. Figure out how to get it done in the first half. And, you know, I mean, you got to give them credit. They do wear teams out. I mean, they wore Stanford out. They wore Utah out. These are two of the more physical teams. And at the very end, they kind of wore Texas out, another big physical team. You know, we'll see. But that was the frustration of the Washington State game. They didn't wear anybody out, you know. You got to do that. You just got to take them out. And if that's not good enough, fine. But don't go, you know, having not given it your best shot, which, again, happened at Washington State. Just go out there and try to take them out. And, Clay came by. We were setting up for instant analysis on the field after the game, and Clay's usually the last guy out, and he goes out the other direction. And he goes by and he says, okay, what's the scoop? What are you guys going to say about us? And I said, well, first thing I'd say is, why don't you ask the scorekeeper, the clock operator, the scoreboard operator, to start every game with 14 points for the other team? And your guys have to come out and have to figure out how to make up those 14 points right away. Play like you're 14 points behind. And he laughed. I'm not sure what exactly he was saying. I said, but if you can play the way you guys play when you're behind, you're pretty good. So for whatever that's worth, if they can figure out how to start these games with her, nothing, as if they're forced to, you know, they're the second half of the Rose Bowl. You know, that's how I think any team that has Sam Darnold at quarterback and any team that, you know, that has the ability to do some things on defense has to play like they're coming from behind.
Yeah. Let's see. We got a couple questions on the secondary. Two different takes. So first is Troy 75. When it comes to USC secondary, it's like there's an elephant in the room nobody wants to talk about. Both Jack and Iman have very difficult times in coverage. It seems to me anytime a team is in a hole and needs to make 20 yards or more, they just throw deep to one of our DBs and they obliges by getting a pass interference call. I've lost count how many times this has happened, yet the idea of making a change here seems to be inconceivable. How come? I will go out on a limb and say that one or both of these DBs will get called for PI at least twice during the Notre Dame game. Can someone stop this insanity? It's just me saying things that shouldn't be said since 1953, Troy 75. And then Paul in Santa Clarita has a little bit different take. He said Jack Jones is greatly improved from the player he was in week one, and Iman Marshall has not. Am I off base with this assessment? I'd love your guys' thoughts. So a couple questions on the secondary, Dan.
Yeah, I think when you talk to Clancy about it, he said he will say, yes, we're putting him in kind of a difficult spot much of the time because we play so much man. Although, this is a little, you know, clue as to what happened. The Utah people said the biggest difference they saw in the second half, and this is from Troy Williams, was that USC went to a lot more zone. And so they felt like they've had to play man. Well, you got to play man if you're going to, you know, really blitz and really try to put pressure on. But when they went to zone, they did have a better second half. And, yeah, you're right. In the Pac-12, probably for anybody going against anybody, you got third and long, you ought to just throw the ball deep and hope that you get the call, because you probably will. You know, they don't, and whether you are or not, a couple of those calls were a little iffy, I thought, but that's the Pac-12 for you. They're going to do that. They just don't have officials who are confident enough to know what's the typical hand-to-hand combat, you know, no advantage gained. And, They're very often out of position. Their mechanics are bad. I mean, the one play, for example, and this is how you know that, on the play that got overturned, all three Pac-12 officials thought that was a catch. Not one of them was in position. That happened exactly lined up with me. And you could tell, because the first thing I usually do, because the guy's body, shielded him from the ball, and I'm looking for where's the official for the spot and everything else. And I realized, oh, wait, one's 12 yards behind the play, one's 15 yards, away from the play this way, and the other guy's like 18 yards, forward. And the first two clearly have not, because they're not in line and they're not sighting the ball. They don't know where, they don't even know where to spot it, much less whether they caught it. So you can see they're looking at one another. They have no clue. And finally, the third guy comes in from basically right center field and says, yeah, it looked like a catch to me. So it was obviously not a catch. They didn't see it. They didn't know what to call. So they just guessed. And this is where, this is the difference, having covered the SEC in the Big Ten. They didn't guess on many plays. Now, they guess in the Pac-12. They're not in position. They're not confident. And if you're going to run third and long and throw a deep ball and isolate one of the USC DBs who, maybe their opinion of how good they are is more than their actual ability to make plays. I know, after the game, Jack Jones told us he thinks he's the best defensive back in college football. And Biggie is so competitive, he just can't allow someone to get a step on him. It's so difficult for him because he wants to be so good and he wants to make every play. And it's hard at times to keep his hands off. And, the Pac-12 guys watch film and they're playing the odds and they think, well, let's throw that one on USC. Even if the other guy, like in the Tyler Vaughn's case against Washington State, even if the other guy actually commits the foul and they don't see it, they're going to call it on USC. So, yeah, USC's in a difficult spot here. Maybe playing a little more zone is the answer and mixing things up. And if you can get that second half result, if your guys up front, they were impressed with the fact that USC hurried Troy Williams, got him off his spots with just a four-man rush without the need to bring help there, which meant they didn't have to play man. So, again, maybe that second half is a real guidepost to, this is how we go the rest of the year.
So Dave and Glendora and Stephen Poway both want to know about the punt return stuff. So we talked about that. Thanks, guys. But they had secondary questions. Steve was about Randall Grimes redshirting, and Clay Helton said he was going to play a bunch of special teams too. So I don't think he got in the game offensively against Utah, but they're going to have him be a special teams contributor. So that's one reason for that. And then Dave wanted to know, what about Akacedric Ware and Vavai catching a football? Seems like they've never get thrown to coming out of the backfield. Rojo drops one pass and then SC abandons throwing passes to the backs, from that point forward. That's from Dave. What do you think?
Yeah, I think they both catch the ball really well. You saw Akacedric make the real good 37-yard catch down the field last week. I think we know Vavai can do that. They haven't been throwing the ball. I mean, I think they went into the season thinking having Stephen Carr really solves that problem. Cause I remember, how overjoyed T was that Stephen Carr was coming in and that was going to change the offense just because of his ability to catch the football. So I think they know they want their running backs to catch the ball. That's a part of the offense he'd like to see refined. That's the thing that I not just killed them at Washington State, not even attempting to throw the ball to the running backs against, Washington State bringing the house and you let them get away with it and don't punish them by, flipping the ball off. And, Yossi's got to be better at immediately taking advantage of stuff like that that somebody's going to give you, take, you know, when they take those kinds of chances. But Rojo, I mean, I don't know that it's his hands as much now. His hands are significantly better and made that one big cast. I think it's more a case of running the route properly, being in the right place. I think he surprised Sam the other day. He wasn't exactly where he was supposed to be. And that, you know, that's a tough thing for a quarterback. And Sam, his fine accuracy, he hasn't been there this year. And you do not want to give him make him find you in a place where you aren't or where you're not supposed to be. And so I think that was the issue Saturday as much as anything. But I think Stephen Carr's return will bring that back.
For sure.
But when that return happens,
yeah,
I don't know. I'd be a little surprised if he can do it this week. But I think that probably limited maybe some of the other guys in terms of their opportunity to get those swing passes and that. And it's there. This offense just hasn't gotten exactly where you want it to be until maybe the second half, you know, this game. And obviously Stanford stood where they are, and they gave USC a target, and USC targeted them and knew where they were going, and everything was very settled going into the Stanford game. Whether that happens anymore this year, whether Notre Dame says, this is who we are, this is how we're going to defend you, see if you can block us. Don't know. But,
yeah.
But I would say Notre Dame is more like Stanford than anybody. You know, they're physical, they're tough, and they're going to say, you know, we dare you. And they're going to come out and try to punch USC in the mouth with their run game. And, you know, I kind of like that matchup when USC knows these guys are going to come out and they're going to just try to, you know, physical. And yeah, you better be ready.
Let's, let's try to do these real quick, the last few, sorry. Nick and Cypress, do you agree with the 2-point conversion call by Coach Whittingham?
Yeah, I do. I mean, it was their best chance to win. They could have played not to lose, and I think you can agree with that. I think they lose if the game goes into overtime. I think they felt like they had zero gas left in the tank on defense, zero. So they couldn't stop Sam. They knew it. There wasn't anything they could do about it. So they rolled the dice. I mean, they had one play, and let's face it, the play didn't even work that they wanted to run. And they almost scored. I mean, if Jenny doesn't react like he does, I think Iman was behind him, and maybe there'd have been a collision right at the pylon. But if Iman doesn't come up like that, or if Troy Williams does what Sam did with Josh Fallow and raises his eyes after he pulls the ball down and looks up and realizes, wait a minute, somebody stopped covering Darren Carrington 15 yards from where he is now, and here's this 6'4 guy standing in the corner all by himself, then we're all saying, wow, that was really smart. I think it was the right thing to do.
Yeah.
I think it was. I know people will say, take the tie, maybe something good will happen in overtime, but you've got the chance to win it on the road. Your team is dead tired. I take the chance.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Bill wanted to let people know that the Utah game on the radio was on a 30-second delay, so basically one play behind. So that's a first. I guess they've been not really delayed before, so that's unfortunate. But just want to let people know. And we got a late text question. Clayton from Santa Clarita, what happened to Daniel Metorbebe? I don't think he was targeted all game. Is he not 100%? He's obviously not 100%. He just came back actually a game earlier than what we thought. But any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't look like he's not 100%. And this week was sort of going to be a bonus if he did get back, because they've certainly been targeting him for the Notre Dame game. So he warmed up, and I think, you know, obviously not as bad as Chuma, but and I guess they got him out there, but not really, you know, he wasn't really Daniel Amater baby. And, you know, the good news is, three touchdown passes to the tight end. They played, my thinking is, if you're going to play a tight end, whoever he is, you have to throw the ball to him. You have to act like he's in the game and he matters. And they did. And lo and behold, they made them, you know, Tyler Petit and Josh Fowler turned into weapons, serious weapons. So, you know, just because Daniel's not there doesn't mean you're having to play without a tight end.
Yeah. And then we have one last one, voicemail question. Let me play it for you and we'll get let you go.
Hi, Ryan. This is Daniel from Los Angeles. I left a message before regarding Clemson playing a Friday night game. They play tonight and they actually lost to Syracuse of all teams. Unranked opponent. So I'm just curious to say, what do you guys think about the poll? I know it's still early, but USC one loss was to a ranked, 16th ranked Washington State team. Oklahoma lost to an unranked Iowa State. And Clemson lost to a completely unranked Syracuse team. And the fact that these two teams have lost to unranked teams that bad, USC still lost to a completely ranked team, providing that Washington State still wins tonight. Just your take, you guys, on that. You know, what do you think about that? Clemson took a Friday night game and it bit them as well, just like USC played a Friday night game and it bit them, but they lost to a better team. Yeah, your thoughts, you guys. Thanks.
Well, you already know more about this than probably half the people voting in the AP poll, and probably way more than that in the head coaches in the coaches poll, who, gosh knows what graduate assistant votes for most of them. But I don't know about Syracuse. Hey, they almost handled Middle Tennessee. You know, they were, I'm being sarcastic here. And that maybe is another reason to say, is the Atlantic Coast Conference as dumb as is the Pac-12 by making Clemson play on a Friday night? Holy criminy. I mean, on the road? Wow. That's really Pac-12 dumb.
Yeah.
So if the ACC and the Pac-12 eliminate themselves from the national championship hunt early, I think we have kind of a sense of why. There's a pretty good reason not to do that. I mean, how do you do that? I didn't realize that the ACC, see, they're angling. They've got a new deal with ESPN, which they're going to have a network. And who knows? Have they had to give some Pac-12-like concessions to ESPN so that ESPN has a game like that on a Friday night? I don't know. But how's that working out for you, ACC? Now, you know, welcome to the Pac-12. So, and they were very lucky. If Miami doesn't, you know, win that thing at the end, they would be just like the Pac-12 with no unbeaten teams. And everybody's saying, well, man, now is the SEC and the Big Ten going to get two teams in apiece? And probably not. But how this is all going to play out, it's difficult enough to go week to week. But if your conference is screwing you and messing with your schedule, making life much more difficult for the teams that have a chance, you know, you kind of deserve what you end up with in the Pac-12 and the ACC when they do things like that to their good teams.
Yeah. All right. Dan Weber does a great job here at USCFootball.com. Thanks for coming on, Dan, and we'll look forward to seeing you out in practice this week.
Yeah, good. Thanks for good questions, and maybe we'll get some of you guys. But although I think the poll question, heck with the poll. Nobody thinks those people know what they're doing.
Right.
And they probably don't. And so, you know, so I look at those and you say, well, I know more than these people do. So, and I don't know how much they mean. I mean, really, where does USC belong? I don't know. How would you know? I mean, if you watch Saturday's game, where do you put USC? I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, are they the team in the first half, team in the second half? Who are they? But it's not just USC. There are a lot of teams like that. So you try to come up with 25 teams, You have no idea. The coaches have no idea which team's going to show up for them. So to try to, you know, vote them, people just, they really, I don't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
But, yeah, they pay more attention to USC. So USC gets the hype. USC gets the build-up. USC has a Washington State game. They get the result. They drop 10 spots. You know, so on the one hand, you kind of like the build-up and the preseason stuff, but then the downside of that is they whack you big time if you take a big misstep. So, you know, that's it works both ways. If USC makes a big run here, they'll probably jump up better than maybe somebody else would have if they make a big run.
Yeah. All right, Dan, great stuff. Everyone else, thanks so much for tuning in. We'll be back in 1 minute. We're going to talk some game odds, against the spread, all that kind of stuff. And even some T. Martin talk, I believe, with Joe Duffy from Offshore Insiders coming up in just a minute.
Meet us on the other side of the break for more of the Peristyle Podcast.
You know, ever since I started the Peristyle Podcast 10 years ago, people have been asking me for betting advice, and mostly if I think USC will be covering the point spread. Well, let me tell you this. Where you are betting is just as important as which side you are betting on. That's why I always tell people to go to mybookie.ag. MyBookie's been in business for years, and their rep is rock solid. They do 100% cash bonuses, so off the bat, you're making money for doing nothing, and they have the fastest payout. Seriously, just 2 business days. You know who's going to win, right? Lay down some cash and you can win big today. I'd only recommend a service to my listeners that's been good to me, and they definitely have. That's why I'm telling you, make your way over to mybookie.ag because they pay. And they also have in-game live betting, the most rewarding player perks in the business, and an all-new mobile site that makes wagering on the go a breeze. So go now to mybookie.ag. They will match your deposit with a 100% bonus if you use the promo code PERISTYLE. So visit mybookie.ag today. You play, you win, and you get paid.
We now return to the Peristyle Podcast and your host, Ryan Abraham.
All right, we're back here on the Peristyle Podcast. Bringing in Joe Duffy again. Does a great job. He's the CEO of OffshoreInsiders.com. Here on behalf of MyBookie.ag, you can follow him on Twitter at OffshoreInsider. Another week, Joe. Another time that USC does not cover the spread.
Yeah. That's true, Ryan. I can just imagine what it's like to be a USC fan. They've certainly made some things interesting, dodging the bullet this year. And then, of course, you know, 2 weeks ago, I had Oregon State as a very good play, and that got a little interesting. So I think even for gamblers, but yeah, they are 6-1 straight up, yet 1-6 against the spread.
Yeah. So my streak of picking them not to cover is continued. Now this week, though, it's a little bit different. The reason is,
because
I feel like USC's good, like Sam Darnold can do things at the end and win a close game at the end. USC's not a favorite this weekend for the first time this year.
Yeah, so it will be impossible for USC to win the game and not cover. But they do have, to say the least, a tough game. Look, from the betting standpoint, I told you that USC kind of fit into my straight-up and dichotomous record theory where you would, a team that keeps winning but not covering, you would bet the spread streak. But one of the reasons that I've been a professional handicapper since 1988 is I like to use these basic theories behind the scientific method. I come up with a theory and then try to disprove it. And I did find that teams with an 800 or better straight up winning percentage and on a 4-game or more spread skid are 40-21 against the spread as long as they're not home favorites. So that does say that USC will cover this week. Look, most of the quote unquote experts do believe that USC is the better team, but Notre Dame is, you could certainly argue, has played much better this year. Look, the Irish, their only loss was to UGA, a team that's number 3 in the country. It was a 1-point game, and all their wins were routs. They're outscoring teams by a 40-16.8 margin, where USC only 34.4-23.7 margin. But, you know, this is, conversely, this is one of those where if a line looks counterintuitive to the year-to-date statistics, you listen to what the odds makers are telling you. Remember, home field advantage is worth about 3 points, and Notre Dame is only a 3.5-point favorite, even though they've played better this year, according to, you know, the, as I said, the margin of victory statistics and how USC, they continue to to barely win. We know they won in triple overtime to Texas. Well, I think it was a triple. Was that double overtime?
Double overtime.
Correct. Yeah. Yes, right. Yeah. So that was a crazy game. They barely beat Utah. So they could easily have a couple more losses, and even against California until they pulled away at the end, they made it interesting where, as I said, the Irish have won every game comfortably with the one exception to a team that's a serious national championship contender. So looking purely at the numbers, you would say that Notre Dame maybe should be a 5 or 6 point favorite when you take into account home field advantage, but they're not. And that's one of those where you kind of use the odds makers' knowledge against them. USC is probably a little bit better than they've shown this year, and I do think that USC might be the play.
Yeah, I'm kind of like, I don't like to pick USC to cover, but this one, as not the favorite, I'm kind of leaning that way. So we'll, I'll keep thinking about it, but that's the way I'm kind of leaning right now. For Sam Darnold, he kind of came back. This was the first game he didn't throw an interception. So, you know, I guess progress. You know, threw three touchdowns to tight ends, which, that kind of made some USC fans happy. Has he kind of crawled back into the Heisman race a little bit?
He is. It certainly helped that, he's got six touchdowns and only one interception the last two games. Look, it hurts that he's not going to have the opportunity to, you know, for example, beat an undefeated team in the Pac-12 championship game and make a big late statement. But to say the least, this is a big week for him against Notre Dame. If he can explode against Notre Dame, and he has, you know, seemingly played his best against the best. He played well against Stanford, played well against Utah. He's now at plus 4,000, which certainly makes him a long shot. That is based on $100 per bet, but he's at least sneaking up there where he is, let's see, 2, 4, 6, 7. He is tied for, I think, 7th in the odds. And look, Bryce Love is sneaking up there. In fact, Bryce Love is now the co-favorite. This is very rare, you know, in the modern era, just in the last few years, of course, where teams have become much more passing-oriented, but the co-favorites are running back Bryce Love and Saquon Barkley. And look, you might even be seeing a dark horse this weekend, Notre Dame running back Josh Adams. He's actually averaging 9 yards per carry. He's got 776 yards. So, you know, you might be going up against a guy who could really sneak into the race himself. But, yeah, this is a big week, to say the least, for Sam Darnold. If he, you know, has 4 touchdowns and no interceptions and leads him to victory, he's going to climb right back up there in the heart of the race.
Yeah, I think like when Carson Palmer won it, it was like the Notre Dame game at the end of the year was a big part of it when they were both top 10 teams. It's the first time both teams are ranked, I think, since 2009. And the first time, now we, Dan Weber talked about this at the beginning of our show. I don't know if you knew this, Joe. The first time USC is going to go to South Bend since 2011 with a regular coach, not an interim coach.
Wow.
So they usually go to South Bend with an interim coach and it doesn't work out that well. So, we'll kind of see.
Yeah, that is true that you've had more than your share of interim coaches, including one that you got from Tennessee. And I think we may, before the podcast is out, talk about a USC coach going to Tennessee. But yeah, that's a very interesting statistic. And now that I think about it, that's definitely true. And it's, you know, I think they do generally play, at least in the past, they used to play later in the year, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah,
So that's when coaches are usually let go, if they're going to be let go late in the year. So.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. So USC's done this midseason. USC plays at Notre Dame like in October. Then when they play in LA, they play at the end of the season. So that's like when Carson Palmer beat Notre Dame, it was at home. So it was like the end of the season gave him a bump. But they've, you know, USC's fired coaches midseason a couple of times, and then they end up going to Notre Dame with an interim, and has it worked out. But you mentioned, so my wife is a big Tennessee grad, Tennessee fan, went to UT, not happy with Butch Jones. There's odds, apparently on mybookie.ag, they got odds about who's going to be the next Tennessee head coach, and one of the USC staffers is on that list.
Yes, mybookie.ag, our favorite sports book, they have posted odds on who the next Tennessee coach is going to be. T. Martin, I really thought he was going to be a little bit higher. He is plus 750. And again, that is a little bit more than 7-1. It's based on $100 per bet. But T. Martin is the leading candidate among those who don't have any head coaching experience. Of course, T. Martin, of course, as a quarterback, brought the national championship to Tennessee. So in some respects, he might be a little bit of a sentimental favorite. You know, I guess really much like Sam Darnold, I think if their offense, if USC's offense can really pick it up this week, he might climb a little bit more. Chip Kelly, to me, is a surprising favorite, a guy who's coached out there on the West Coast. But T. Martin is plus 750, and I think his name could definitely climb if USC runs the table and if their offense really winds up living to the preseason hype.
All right. Joe Duffy does a great job over at offshoreinsiders.com. Make sure you check him out. You can follow him on Twitter at Offshore Insider. Thanks, Joe, for coming on and sharing some insights. Should be interesting, USC being a dog for the first time.
Yeah, that is for sure, Ryan. And in fact, at mybookie.ag, they are 3.5-point underdog, and we will talk to you next week.
All right, sounds good. That's Joe Duffy. Thanks again. And everyone else, thank you so much for tuning in to the Peristyle podcast. We will talk to you next time.
You may have noticed that shopping at Trader Joe's is unlike shopping at other markets. People ask us all the time how we manage to have such unique, interesting, and delicious products at such great everyday prices. This is Dan Bain of Trader Joe's. The answer is simple. It's all in the way we do business. We buy directly from the manufacturer whenever possible. This helps to keep our costs low, and we pass those savings on to you. No gimmicks, just great values at honest prices every day at Trader Joe's. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. Don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your smartphone or tablet for free. Just click the iTunes link on PeristylePodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.